Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't forget David Poyle region, our final region for you to vote on. We'll have this thing whittled down to 32 teams as of 9 o'clock tonight. Speaking of that, in the David Poyle region, Tony Kemp will join us at the bottom of the hour. The one seed, Pecorine, in control with 94% of the votes to this point. The 8-9 matchup, you heard our conversation with Matt Frege last hour. Right now, he has 27% of the votes, but right now, Delaney Walker, the 8 seed, with 73% of the votes.
We have a colleague that has weighed in on this, that has been watching this bracket, one Mitch Light. He says that we have really screwed Matt Frege with this 8-9 matchup, as Delaney Walker is one of those popular players in Titans history. He said this is a tough 8-9.
It is indeed a tough 8-9. Right now, Derek Mason, D-Mace, the 4 seed, having all kinds of issues with Victor Arvidsson. 50-50 right now.
I think we put Derek in a pickle here, too. Victor Arvidsson is the same kind of thing. Extremely popular
50-50
player. This has become
right now.
Popularity Ooh. Is such a huge part of this thing.
Mm. Sonny Gray, the 5 seed, with 49% of the votes, trailing Jarrell Casey, the 12 seed, with 51% of the vote. Another close one. This is going to be 2 days in a row. We're going to have several of the matchups that may come down to the last hour of voting. The 6 seed, Bruce Matthews, in control, with 62% of the vote over David Leguan, the 11 seed. Right now, Drew Maddox, looking to be the second 14 seed to pull off an upset after Kevin Dyson did it yesterday. Drew Maddox with 57% of the vote, leading Jalen Ramsey, the 3 seed, with 43%. Philip Forsberg in control, cruising as the 7 seed with 83% of the vote over Samari Roll. Derrick Henry, the 2 seed, also in control with 85% of the vote over the 15 seed, Tony Kemp. Now, Willie and Chase have told me we're having Adam Vinken on from The Athletic. There is no hockey. I don't know what we're having him on to talk about. He writes for The Athletic. So, Adam, welcome to the show.
Hi, Darren. How are you? Hi, everybody.
Good.
Hi, Adam.
I've just been told that you want to come on the show. I don't know why. I don't know what we're supposed to talk to you about, but
okay,
we're having you on.
Darren, we received contact from Adam yesterday, who's been enjoying the show, and we've enjoyed his writings on The Athletic here as we continue to get creative, you know, with content and material.
And he has an interesting
for our
article that's up right
now. Oh, very good. In fact, we are going to ask him about that. But so, Adam, tell people, you have a problem with some of the conduct that has been going on here.
Yes, I know that I'm an hour early for You Just Made the List, but I have informed Willie and Chase that I am going to put Darren McFarland on the list.
Moi? What? Why?
Darren, you are on my list.
For?
Your terrible dad memes on Twitter. They have to stop.
No. Absolutely not. You know how.
They're
Adam,
awful.
How long have you known me? You listen to the show. You know the more you tell me not to, the more I'm going to do. That's how it works.
Perhaps it's because during these uncertain times, we're all quarantined at home.
Uh-huh.
We're perusing Twitter a little bit more than we usually do, and they're just
a little bit more.
The stay-at-home music festival you had yesterday, the Little
that
Debbie
was good.
March Madness tournament.
I offered
stop.
Up tickets
it's
for that
awful.
For that stay-at-home concert. That was a nice gesture during these tough times. I offered up free tickets.
I don't know how you're spending your time. You have a family. You have a wife and children. You should be paying more attention to them than perusing Google for these terrible dad memes. They have to stop. You're on the list.
But I am a dad. Adam, what do you want me to do? I am a dad. What do you? I can't. I can't change that status.
I know, and I don't want you to change that status, but you need to be a little bit more discerning in your Twitter contact. That's all I'm saying.
Are you saying
you yet? I you don't want to do it, but I'm perilously close to hitting that mute button.
Oh, stop it. You do not feel that. You are now you're coming off as Mr. Starched Underwear guy. Come on. Come on. Don't you are not are you telling me not one time have you smiled or laughed not one time?
No, it's been a lot of groaning.
Oh, my gosh. Well, there are other people.
I'm not going to mute you. I was being a bit dramatic there, but it's got to stop.
A little over the top. Look, I just want to bring a smile or a laugh to somebody's face. That's clearly I'm not getting through to you, and I know there's probably others that feel the same way, and that's fine. But there are others that I feel like if it brings a smile or a laugh to them, then it's mission accomplished. Look, let's just be perfectly honest. We don't want to talk about it, but these times right now, they suck, okay? We're all, you know, stir crazy. We're all in just weird times, but, you know, there's real issues out there, too. And there's people that are going through some crazy, crazy stuff, especially people in the medical profession. Hat tip to them. I have a lot of friends in the medical profession, and I applaud them, and I think the world of them even more because – their jobs are real in times like this. I mean, what they walk into every day is not what the four of us are doing. So that's all I'm trying to do is, you know, just trying to bring a little joy to what right now is going to be. We're going to be hunkered down for a while, and it's going to suck for a while, and then we'll eventually get out of this and we'll be better off. But I don't know what else to do. I mean, what do you want me to do? You want me to analyze games that aren't happening? What do you want me to talk about?
Well, I appreciate the sentiment. I think you're right. We're doing whatever we can to provide some levity during these uncertain times and for those people who are taking their lives at risk to help those who are ill. I'm just saying you might need a Twitter crash course. We can set up a Zoom conference if you'd like.
Well, I have
okay.
a question.
I'm all for Zoom
right
now. I think
that's a good idea.
I'm all for Zoom.
I have a question, and Darren, I'm asking this seriously. I'm not trying to pile on, but look, I have helped you with some technological things in the past, and so I'm curious because I can remember when you started this whole GIF thing, where pretty much any text or tweet, you respond with a GIF or a meme or something, you find them entertaining, and that's what you do, and I like that. But how did that start? Was that something that your wife taught you, or where did you learn how to use GIFs and memes properly?
That's a really good question. I don't know.
Because now you're known for that.
Well, I think the pleasure that I get out of it is you guys have all heard me say this. I mean, I would just enjoy talking in GIFs or memes. I mean, I really would. I would prefer to have conversations with just pictures. That's, you know, I get joy out of that. And it just, to me, it says a lot more. Just rather than writing stuff out, it truly can express how you feel about something. And so I've just enjoyed it. Look, I have pleasure out of it. Is it silly? Sure. Does it make people like Adam? Some people like Adam, you know, do they groan? Do they eye roll? Sure. I'm sure there's all kinds of people like Adam out there that do that. And that's fine. It's okay. It's America. You can have you're free to feel however you want, but there's others that, you know, enjoy it and it brings joy to me. And that's the reason I do it. I don't know how else to answer. It's a good question. I don't remember, Chase, exactly how it was hatched, to be
perfectly
honest.
I will say this though, in your defense, Darren, I will say this, at least you know how to attach pictures to tweets, unlike my colleague at The Athletic, Joe Rexroad. So I will give you that. You know
what do you mean by that?
We a couple of weeks ago had a Slack conversation between myself, Joe, Mitch, and John Glennon as we were preparing for a certain story, and we were trying to explain to Joe how to attach a photo to his tweet, and he didn't know how to do it.
Okay.
So at least you know how to do that.
That is interesting that Joe did not know how to do that.
We got to work with Joe on that one. Holy cow.
Yes.
Hey, So, Adam, let's talk about this story you put together. I know at The Athletic, just like Joe and some of the others that we're really every athletic writer, every sports writer is trying to come up with material here, and we're all sitting here dying for stuff to read and sink our teeth into. You came up with this Predators fan survey, and you polled them for a lot of different questions. Tell us about that. I want to start off with this, too. The first question is, when did you become a Predators fan? The highest percentage of people that responded were day one fans. I thought that was really interesting. Almost 37%, by far the highest response, have been fans of the team since the very beginning.
So for that particular question, I try to frame the possible responses around certain moments in franchise history. So the five choices were day one, 1998, around their first playoff appearance, 2004, around their first playoff series win, 2011, around when Peter Laviolette became coach, 2014, and around their run to the Stanley Cup final or later, so 2017 to present day. And it was actually, you know, there was a pretty even split, I feel like, it was a lot more even than I thought, but I agree with you. I was surprised that I think more than half of the respondents have been fans since the early days of the franchise. The top two selections were day one and then around their first playoff appearance in 2004. Now, that is not to say that everybody who selected 2004 became a fan of the Predators because they won because they made it to the playoffs for the first time in 2004. But maybe around those years, 2002, 2003, 2004. So the majority of the readers, and there were almost 400 readers who participated, more than half became fans during the early days of the franchise, which I thought was interesting. I thought there would be a greater number of people who said they became fans around the Stanley Cup final run or later, but that was actually the least chosen response among those that I presented to the readers.
Here's another interesting one, guys. I don't know if you've pulled it up here, but your favorite Predators jersey. You had, 400 people participated in the survey?
Yes, it was 380 people exactly.
380, so, you know, decent sample size, and by far the most popular Predators jersey, and maybe this is recency bias at work, just like we've been talking about all week in our voting poll in the brackets, but the Winter Classic jersey, 37%, got by far the highest vote.
And I would agree with that. I talked about this with Ryan Porthen and Robbie Stanley last night, that I think the Winter Classic sweaters were a huge hit. I really liked them. I thought they looked great on the ice. It was probably the only thing that looked great on the ice for the Predators on New Year's Day. And then I thought that when they wore them at home at Bridgestone Arena a couple of times where we could get a closer look at them on the ice, I thought they looked really good. I'm hoping that they'll work them into the rotation more often when the NHL resumes. I think they look great. You know, the one thing I was also surprised about was there was not a lot of love for the mustard. I thought there would be more love for the mustard.
Surprised
people
by that
did
too.
Not like the mustard.
The players could not stand the mustard. That's the funny part about that. Ask Chris Mason or anybody, Scott Nickel, anybody who played with those. They all say the same thing. They were way too thick and hot. They did have their appeal. I would not rank them very high with that. But for some reason, you'll still see some of those working through the crowd when you go to a Predators game. You'll see some of those pop up.
Oh yeah.
Oh, for sure. And the Navy alternate received a lot of love as well, which I also see.
Oh yeah, I like that
a lot at Bridgestone Arena.
I don't know if you guys want to weigh in on this. I got one more that I want to throw at Adam. If you guys want to kick around, there's some very interesting questions about this, but. It looks like the jury is still out, especially it looks like John Hines, from what the polling looks like. They weren't real thrilled with him. They didn't know much about him when they first hired him. Of course, it happened so fast. But it looks like he's won the fan base over to a point, but the jury is kind of still out. Is that an accurate way to read it?
I would say that. And there were two questions about John Hines. The first was he the right choice to replace Peter Laviolette? And it was simply a yes or no question. And the majority of those who voted said no. I believe it was around 62-63% of respondents said no. But then the following question was, on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being low, 5 being high, what is your confidence level in John Hines, and I think 55% said three, so right in the middle. So I think that best exemplifies where the fan base is with John Hines, because, of course, he's only coached 28 games for the team. So the more than half of the people who participated, as you said, Willie, still feel that the jury remains out about John Hines, and I think that confidence level poll, I think, best exemplifies that, with more than half of those who voted saying they gave him a 3 out of 5 in terms of confidence level.
I'm good.
Darren?
Did we lose Darren?
Did we lose Darren? I guess we lost Darren. Well, I guess Darren has gone over to
– I muted myself again. I'm sorry.
Okay, I thought he was going
to
erase the memes
a little bit.
Yeah, I thought he was just scrolling through to get rid of some of those things because he planted some seeds there, Adam.
No, you're on the record, and that's fine. But it's just not going to change anything. It's not. But you have been you've put it on the record. You've put me on the list, and that's fine. But yeah, I'm not going to change, bud.
That's okay. At least I tried.
Hey, you don't change either, Adam. Okay, you keep doing what you're doing. Okay.
Enjoy WrestleMania.
Thanks, guys.
By the way, I've seen polls out there, people saying they're not going to watch. Are you guys surprised by that? Wrestling fans?
Nah, I'm not.
No
surprised.
Interest.
I think they should have postponed it.
There's nothing else I have to do but watch.
Okay. Adam, thank you for coming on.
All right, Darren, be good. If you ever need help on Twitter, we'll set up a Zoom conference.
I'm all about Zoom. That's a good lead-in. We're going to actually do a Zoom this weekend on the second-round matchups that we will put out for everybody to view. So we're actually going to start incorporating that into the show. So thanks for bringing that up.
Of course. Anytime. Be safe, guys.
All right. You too. Adam Vingan from The Athletic. Go check out his work there. And I'm being serious. We are going to do, the three of us and Ryan Porth are going to do some Zooming this weekend. Is that a word? Zooming about what our bracket looks like going into the second round, the 32 athletes that are left standing. We'll talk about that at length and put that out there for everybody over the weekend. Tony Kemp at the bottom of the hour. More of Darren, Donnick, and Chase next.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away.
Tony Kemp coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll catch up with Tony, find out what he is up to. I'm trying to see if anything newsworthy. There's been a little bit of things trickling in and out. By the way, did you guys hear Governor Bill Lee yesterday with his press conference?
Yeah, I watched a lot of it.
Yeah.
Or listened to it. Listen and watch. So
I did
what
not.
Did you think?
Well, look, I mean, I think we're in a position where the hammer has to come down, so to speak, because people need to stay home. We need to flatten this thing. And you know, he brought up the traffic patterns and that it was, you know, trailing off for a while and then it's picked back up, and so that's why there is now a firmer stance on this safer at home order that he's put out there, and you know, some enforcement could start now. And so my message to everyone listening is just stay home, because this is like we've used so many analogies with this, but I'll use this one. It's like a kid on Christmas. You know, the sooner you go to bed, the sooner you can wake up and see what Santa brought. So just stay home, and then we can get back to our normal lives. So I think that that's the right message.
I think you were like a dad there, Chase. That was impressive.
That was pretty good.
Christmas reference? Wow.
Just practicing.
Very nice. The hard part that we've all had to try to wrap our arms around, right, is that if it hasn't affected you, then you're sitting there in your house and you're going, well, why are we doing this? You know, like it has. I don't know anybody around me. Nobody's had this. But that's good. It's hard to comprehend for those people, maybe in some rural counties where they haven't had any cases, but it's coming, right? It's spreading. We've got to stay in place so it doesn't ever get there. And that would be great if it never gets to certain neighborhoods or certain counties, certain areas. That would be awesome. That means that what we're doing is working. And I realize it's hard because everybody over there is going, what do we need to stop for? We don't have a problem. But that's the whole point. The virus is spreading. And it doesn't stop at borders of counties or state lines, right? But it's hard to really grasp that if you haven't been really paying attention to what the doctors are saying. So we've got to do this. We've just got to do this.
We talked to Brent Snedeker this week, and he brought up the Open, right? Didn't he say it was supposed to be in London? The British Open? And
the
so,
British Open.
Yeah, the British Open. And right now they're still, he said he felt like things were going towards just like everything else, that it was not going to happen. But yet they have still have not, I have not seen where they have ruled on that just yet. Have you guys?
No, I haven't. I have not seen that.
I honestly, I haven't looked specifically on that part of it.
It's the middle of July.
In the
way,
you're saying, like, in the wake of Wimbledon announcing, you do wonder if
right.
it's just a matter of time before they announce that.
It's at Royal St. George's, of course, in England. And like you said, Wimbledon's already been canceled. In fact, it's supposed to start, like, right after Wimbledon, like four or five days later afterwards. And so, you know, that's already been canceled, not even postponed. That's been canceled. And you do wonder, Brant brought that up several days ago, and I'm a little surprised that the PGA has not come out and said anything about it just yet, other than they're still weighing the option. They're still talking about it, but they have not officially said one way or the other. Also saw where Dabo Swinney, you know, I don't understand why these guys, Clemson's coach, you know, why they say some of that, what makes them not get, you know, we talk about the common sense factor. Like, how do they not get cut? Like, why would you even go down that road? I mean, he said he has zero doubt that they're going to be playing and the stands are going to be packed. He said zero doubt that the college season starts on time and that they will be playing in front of fans. Like, why would you say that? Like, we just started April. Why would you put yourself out there and say that? I don't understand. Like, why can't somebody get to these guys and say, no, I wouldn't word it that way. Everybody wants to be optimistic, but don't say that.
You're right. They want to be positive, right? I don't think there's anything wrong with the mentality of wanting to be positive, wanting to be optimistic. But when you're a high-profile person like a football coach of his influence, you know, I think he has to balance that. It's got to be, hey, I want to be positive, but let's also realize, you know, that we don't know what's happening here, and we have to do these measures. We have to take these things very seriously, and only if we all do it can we get through this as quickly as possible. You know, these are the people that have got to drive the message home. I really love the fact that so many leaders in the professional ranks, right? You see a lot of NBA players, a lot of NHL players, a lot of coaches. One of the first was Ed Orgeron, right? That, you know, jumped up there and tried to grab his fan base and say, hey, this is serious, right? We've got to do these things. You know, mix some optimism in there. Nothing wrong with that. But, you know, be the leader that influences the people that will listen to you. That's such an important thing.
Yeah, and you know, that's what I've been trying to say, too. So this is show, what, 12 that we've been doing?
Show 12, yep.
These from home. So I left the radio station on a Wednesday, and we had made the decision and gave you guys the equipment that we were going to do the shows remotely. Since that time, I have left my house to go to the grocery store a couple times, and I ran back to the radio station to grab some other things that I knew I was going to need. And that's basically it. I mean, it just...
Yeah, I don't think I've driven my car in about a week. Definitely not out of the neighborhood.
You're going to want to go start that thing to make sure, you know, the battery doesn't go down.
Good point, yeah.
But look, I mean, it sucks. It's boring. It's, you know, you run out of things to do, but kind of is what it is right now. And like I said, the sooner we all listen and do this, the sooner we can get back to normalcy.
No doubt about it. We'll come back. Tony Kemp, friend of the show. We'll find out what he's been up to, talk a little bit about where he sits in the bracket, what's on the mind of baseball players. We'll talk to former Vanderbilt great Tony Kemp. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good message here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Today it's the David Poile region, our final region. For you to vote, 9 o'clock tonight is when we will close up shop, and then we will have this thing whittled down to 32 athletes before we start whittling things down again more. next week. Our next guest, friend of the show, Tony Kemp. Vanderbilt great on the baseball field, and he's got his hands full today. He is going up against the two seed, Derrick Henry, and right now, Tony, you just have 17% of the vote. There's going to have to be a social media push and a plea on the show to get the Vanderbilt fans and the fans of you in Williamson County, get them going and get on there and start voting.
Dude, honestly, I'm honored to be a part of it.
Well, in our committee, in all seriousness, this was tough. We've tried to tell people that have complained, why wasn't this person in there? Why wasn't that person? We get it. It was hard. Believe it or not, getting this thing down to 64 was not easy, and you were an interesting discussion piece in those meetings.
We
came to your defense.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. No, the bracket looks cool, man. I mean, there's a lot of talent in this pool, man. I mean, wow, all the way from Steve McNair to John Jenkins to Mari Roll, man, Jalen Hurd. Yeah, you go back, there's been so many athletes that come through Nashville, come through Tennessee.
Well, what's interesting is we had Jordan Matthews on the show, and of course he's in our bracket, and he won, by the way. He beat Ryan Suter. He was the 11th seed, and he beat Ryan Suter. But he actually talked about you and brought you up and was also glad that you made the bracket. And he talked about the time when your paths crossed at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, it's actually been cool, our relationship, ever since we were in summer school, getting some hours in before our freshman year. And we used to play video games against each other all the time because we had, on one hall, we had, probably 10 football guys, 8 baseball guys, all taking classes. And it was cool to really get to know Jordan and play video games. He's a great freestyle. He's a great freestyle rapper. He's unbelievable. I have to go back and see if I have some videos of him. But we had some good times, and we always would talk about, what would happen when we would, make the NFL or make it to the big leagues, and that we would always remain friends. And man, we've remained tight.
That's a great story. And right now, he was telling us when he joined us that he's in grad school at Northwestern, and that he was taking classes, and he had stepped away from his schoolwork to do the show for us. So he is as you know, that probably doesn't surprise you. He's a guy that, while he wants to play football as long as he can, he certainly is also thinking about life after football, post-football. And he'll, as we've said on the show, he'll do whatever he wants to do.
Yeah, he's always been a smart cat. And I think he settled in, the Brentwood area. So not sure if he's building a house there or what he's doing, but he knows what he wants, and he knows that football is not going to last forever. And, you got to start setting up those plan B plans. So, you could see that he's moving down the right path. He's going to do just fine.
Tony, take us through spring training. Tell us what that experience was like. Obviously, you're with the A's now. You got traded from the Astros to the Cubs. So you finished up the season with the Cubs, and now you're with the Athletics. What was it like? When did you kind of feel that this was maybe going this direction? Just kind of take us through spring training.
Yeah, so spring training was great. Being out in Scottsdale, Arizona for the first time and getting away from that Florida spring training. Arizona is so much better. The weather.
Is it really?
Yeah, there's no humidity. I loved it. I had a great time. Obviously, it was cut short by this coronavirus, but it was unbelievable. I had a good time. It's a good team to be a part of, and the guys are hungry, and they know what it takes, and they know what's ahead of us. And I think that everyone was, set on the right track to go, go out and win as many games as possible, and go to the playoffs, and go deep in that regard. But it's weird right now being at home in April. I think last time I was at home in April in Nashville was 2013.
Wow. And so that would be the last year you were playing here at Vanderbilt, right?
Yeah, I was in college, so it's a little weird. I'll be honest with you.
So, Tony, how are you trying to stay in shape? Because we all would love to know exactly when things get started, and there's such a routine that a baseball player goes through each year, getting ready. What are you doing in January? What are you doing in February as you prepare to go to spring training? So now when you can't get together with a group. So how are you staying in shape?
Yeah, and that's the kind of sitting in limbo. That's the weird thing is there's no – it's like – imagine going into an off season and there's no report date for spring training or anything. So I'm not trying to overkill it right now. I've got a little home gym with a treadmill, a couple weights, some ropes, and I'm working out 3 times a week. You know, they have all these guys on different programs, and not trying to do it overkill, but just like maintain the body. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday, getting in a home workout. Until I can actually, throw. I mean, I've been throwing wall ball with my dog to keep my arm loose. But as far as like hitting, man, I mean, everywhere's closed down unless you order a tee. But you know, you order a tee and then you have to, you got to get turf and you got to get a bunch of other things. So I'm just kind of playing it by ear right now, because there's no end date, and then, you know, dates keep getting pushed back and think more and more things keep getting canceled. So, it's kind of just a waiting game for right now.
Tony Camp is with us, the 15 seed, an underdog against Derrick Henry for sure, but in the field, could use your vote for sure in the Nashville sports bracket. Born and raised here in this area, and that's, Tony, we've been getting nostalgic with some of the people. We've had some great conversations as we referenced Jordan Matthews. He singled you out as somebody he got to know. I asked him, you know, who are some of the people that you got to know outside of the football team, and he mentioned you. You've got a lot of guys in this field that you saw that you played with at Vanderbilt. You mentioned John Jenkins. So anybody else that jumps out at you, who were your fun relationships with while you were at Vanderbilt outside of the baseball team?
I mean, obviously, you spend a lot of time in McGugan, so that's where you do all your study hall hours, and all the student athletes would be in there. And I always gravitated toward like the basketball players, and that's why me and John Jenkins, we had the same Spanish tutor. So once he would get done, me and Conrad Gregor and some other guys would go in. So we would always say hi and bye, and then we would hang out more off the field. One guy I got to know probably the best was probably Festus Ezeli. He was a guy that just like had a huge heart, on the court, and he, you know, always, I would always see him work his butt off. And I was like, you know, I want to surround myself with, you know, that guy because he knows what it takes and he's a hard worker and he just gets it. And, you know, being able to have that relationship with Festus, I mean, you know, we still talk probably, I would say, a couple times a month. I mean, we catch up with each other. It's not every day, but Festus was one of those guys that a lot of people looked up to because he had a lot of odds, you know, against him being from a different country and coming to Vanderbilt and playing basketball and then being a part of the Warriors. And now he's working his way back to, you know, the NBA and seeing all the progress that he's made. Yeah, it's cool to call him a friend for sure.
Well, that's a good one. Now, I want to ask you this: another guy that's in the bracket today happens to be Sonny Gray, and I'm curious that when you were in high school, you played at Centennial. He's from Smyrna. I don't remember what the year difference is for you. I think maybe a couple years apart. Did you ever grow up and you ever face Sonny at all in any area game?
You know what? I didn't. We played 1 year at Vandy, and Sonny's a great guy. So many good things to say about him. Such a great athlete, but even the better human. The first time I faced him was an inner squad when we played the Black and Gold series at Vanderbilt, and had a couple hits off him. And I don't know why. I always see Sonny well. And even going back to a couple of times that I faced him in the big leagues, he always gives me a hard time, but I think I was the first Vandy guy to get a hit off of him, so he got me a a nice bottle of whiskey. So that was pretty.
He did. that's good. That's good. He got you a bottle of whiskey because you were the first ex teammate to get a hit off of him.
Yeah.
Oh man,
what was the bottle?
I can't remember. I want to say it was like a Basil Hayden's.
Okay. Very nice. Nicely done.
Very nice. Yeah.
You know, we've been asking this a lot. We've been getting nostalgic with a lot of the athletes we've had on in the field this week. But, you know, I love asking the local guys. So, Tony, growing up, take Tim Corbin out of the mix. But growing up, who was the most influential coach in your life, whether it was a baseball coach or coach in another sport? But who really got to you and put you on the right path early?
Yeah, other than Corbin, I'd probably have to say, you know, I can't say my brother. My brother, obviously, he was more of a life coach. But I would probably have to say my high school coach, Rob Boffman. He was a pretty influential character in my not only my baseball career, my football career as well. He was one of the running backs coach, and he coached my brother when he played baseball at Centennial. And he just led me in the right direction. I feel like he taught me a lot of things growing up. Is, you know, when you're a freshman, sophomore in high school, you're kind of new to things, and brought me in, didn't really knock on my game too much, kind of just let me play and, you know, have fun with it. And I thought that was pretty cool. So I'd probably have to say my high school coach. He was one of those guys that just got it. You know, other than that, I had a great hitting coach, Steve Ashcraft, who taught me a lot in the cages, and he threw lefty BP, and I think that's why I don't mind facing lefties, is because just seeing him all the time, you know, allowed me to hit lefties better. So we'll see if whenever my kid, when he's a lefty, I'm just going to start throwing left-handed.
We're talking to Tony Kemp of the Oakland Athletics, and, you know, as I sit here and listen to this, and we've, you know, discussed it, if and when the season gets underway, I think it's safe to say it's going to be tough to get in 162. And so scheduling is going to, you know, have to get creative. That probably means some double headers. First part of this question is, from your point of view as a player, how difficult is it to prepare for a double header? And especially knowing that there probably would be more than you're used to.
You know, I think the thing with double headers is you just have to prepare. You just have to prepare for the long haul, and you have to prepare for each inning, and you can't just look down the road, because your mind will go in different places. So I think you just have to go inning by inning and just be in the moment as much as you can and just grind through it. And, you know, obviously we're not going to get in this full season, but I think that we have to protect ourselves as players too, because obviously, yes, you want to give the fans, you know, what they pay for, what they want to see. But at the same time, it's, you know, you got to take care of arms. You got to take care of your bodies, because it's going to be a shortened season. And everyone's, if we even do play, everyone's going to try to speed up that process. So you just have to, we just have to take care of ourselves. I mean, if that means doubleheaders, yes. But I think that we're going to have a couple more off days in between. So we'll see what happens. I mean, right now, I just hope everyone stays safe. I mean, I think this whole virus thing kind of spread and got worse than what people really imagined. So yeah. I'm glad people are finally listening.
And I don't know where you stand on scheduling playing 162 just in a normal season, but do you think this opens the door for, okay, maybe we can cut some games off the regular season and, you know, maybe bring this down to 150, 120, I don't know what the number would be, but I don't know where you stand on that. But do you think that that's going to start the conversation?
Yeah, I think it might be. I mean, 162 is just, it's a lot on the body. And, you know, we're not even talking about mentally. We're not even talking about how you feel after a season when you just want to sit on the couch and not, and just look out the window, because your brain has just processed so many things in the past 6 months. But we'll see. It's definitely going to be a conversation. It's definitely going to be something that is not taken lightly. So it's going to be interesting. We'll see. Hopefully, I still have at least 10 years in me.
Tony, I know that you talked about it at spring training, and that you, with everything that went on with the Astros, that you had those opportunities and chose not to take it. But How difficult has this whole thing been with, you know, guys that you played with and came up with going through this whole scandal with Houston?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, you know, obviously it was tough. And, I mean, I wish that, you know, none of it would have happened. But it was just one of those things where I felt was right in my heart just to do and just say no. And, you know, it was – I was in a weird spot because I was coming up from AAA at the time. Didn't have – probably had only 5 or 6 months in the big leagues at that time. And, you know, just chose not to participate. You know, I feel like at the end of the day, that's just kind of how I felt about it.
Well, on this show, as we wrap this up, Tony, we said many, many times we were not surprised by that statement. And for anybody who doesn't know you and you may be skeptical, then you just don't know Tony Kemp, because we said we believe him 100% and we're not surprised at all by those comments. Hey, you be safe. Always good to catch up with you. Hopefully we'll be talking about the start of a baseball season sooner rather than later. But good luck today. Get the word out. Let's get some votes going your way, and we'll talk soon.
All right. I appreciate you guys. I'll see you guys soon.
All right. That is Tony Kemp. All right, now with the A's, and today he is going up against Derrick Henry, so he needs your votes. He's got just over 9 hours before we close up shop on the David Poyle region. Speaking of closing up shop, we will come back and wrap up the second hour next. Good stuff from Tony Kemp coming up in the next hour. You Just Made the List and Stu Grimson. That's in the third hour. Trivia in the fourth and final hour on this Friday of Darren, Donnie, and Chase. Speaking of baseball, did you guys see Buster Olney, who we have certainly talked to over the years and gotten to know quite well, a Vanderbilt grad. A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luhnow, who, of course, were the manager and general manager of the Houston Astros, were that whatever happens with this season, if there is 80 games, 100 games, 60 games, no games, the season's canceled, that right now, I guess the way the language is set up, that A.J. Hinch and Luhnow would have fulfilled their year-long suspension, which I guess in the language is basically the calendar year of 2020.
Yep.
How do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, I brought that up yesterday when I saw it go across the ticker. I mean, if that's the way it was written, if it was 2020, then I guess that's right. Now, this is something that I think Major League Baseball could go back and reevaluate, but you know, I kind of personally think they should, because no games are being played. So it's kind of like if you get a suspension and you're injured, you know, that it shouldn't count during the injury. It should only count if you have to actually miss games. So I kind of think they should go back and look at it. That's just me.
What kind of power does the commissioner have to adjust that? If they get 100 games in somehow, then I think that's probably sufficient, right? It's a season. If they end up not really playing much of a season at all, then I think you have to really look at that. But I'm curious what ability the commissioner has to just make the decision and say, you know what, we're extending it through X.
You know what I would love to see, and this won't happen, but I would love to see this, because then I'm going to actually know that they're sorry. If they came out and they said, if A.J. Hinch and Luhnow came out and said, you know what, we're going to be suspended next year too. If this season doesn't happen at all, if they come out and say, you know, this doesn't count because no games were played, we are truly sorry for this, and take their medicine and take it that way. They're not going to do that, but I would love to see that, because that would actually go very far in saying, you know what, they actually know they did something wrong.
Yeah, I think that would go a long way, because remember the other part of this, even if they were eligible, somebody would have to reach out and hire them. Now, Hinch, from what people say, is going to be a hot commodity when he's eligible again, because, you know, he's at least been open about it. I don't know how honest he's been, but he says, you know, he tried to stop it. He knew it was going on. He should have stopped it. So to a degree, he's come clean more than Luhnow. Would you guys agree with that?
I don't know who, I mean, other than our last guest and some others who, you know, that a whistleblower, somebody who said they chose not to participate, really other than people like that, I don't know how anybody did enough. I mean, they just, you're not going to really get me to sympathize much with A.J. Hinch. I mean,
it went
on his watch, so, you know, and it went on for a while. So, no, he didn't do enough, and no, he has no sympathy for me. He was the skipper.
So, okay. So with that said, Darren, if he did come out and say, let's say the season doesn't happen at all, and or half a season, and he came out and he said, no, this needs to, I need to serve my time when games are actually being played. So I'm going to sit out until my time is served. Would you, I'm not going to say, you know, would that earn some respect with you, I guess?
Well,
if he did that?
I mean,
or would
you view it as
that's just a PR move?
No, I mean, you'd have to view it a little bit like that. I mean, I guess going back to Willie's portion of this, who has shown any remorse on the side of people that just adamantly said they were not a part of it or they were not the whistleblower? I mean, who has shown – I mean, we've all sat and laughed, or at least I have, mocked, and, you know, I don't even want to hear from some of the players that we've heard from. It's like, just stop. You know, just stop talking. Like you look and sound ridiculous. So, I mean, AJ Hinch is just in that boat. I didn't see any remorse from anybody.
Yeah, and like the one that bothers me, and this shouldn't surprise either of you because my love of the Braves, but you know, Brian McCann was on those teams, and there have been reports that he tried to stop it, but he's been pretty quiet about it. Like he hasn't come forward, and there have been reports that's all this has been eating him up. But I would like to hear from him because he's somebody that I really respected as a player, even after he left Atlanta, and then when he came back last year, that was awesome to retire as a Brave. But there are some guys like that, you know, I truly don't believe were a part of it, and probably did try to stop it. But I want to hear from them.
Well, look, I'm not going to sit here and be phony about it and act like this is easy to do. I understand the dynamic. It's not easy to do. There's a lot of people involved, and you've got a chemistry in a room that you have to think about. It's not easy. One person standing up and saying, guys, this is BS, we can't do this, would not have brought this thing to a screeching halt. It doesn't work like that. So I understand. It's not easy. It's extremely difficult. But you can at least come out and say, like Tony Kemp, like, I was given the opportunity and I chose not to. Okay,
right.
I did not participate. Now, you can do that. I do think it's extremely hard to stand up and make it happen as a group just by you standing up and saying, I'm putting my foot down, you know, we shouldn't do this. I do understand that portion of it. But you as an individual do have the opportunity, and the right thing to do is to say, okay, well, this is going to happen, you know, this is going to happen no matter what, and I'm going to be a part of this, but I'm not going to be a part of it. Like, I can't change it. It's going to happen, or this is going to continue to keep going on, and I can't stop it, but I'm just not going to be a part of it.
So Evan Gattis, who was also, you know, played with Atlanta and was also with the Astros, mm-hmm. has known Brian McCann for a long time, was on a podcast this week, a Braves podcast on The Athletic, and said, quote, I could tell it was eating him up. He didn't like it one bit. He's played so long, and he just understands what it takes to get to the big leagues, and he's got a lot of respect for big leaguers. You could just tell. Mm-hmm. That's talking about Brian McCann.
That's what I'm saying. So Brian McCann knew, one, you know, guys like – think about Tony Kemp. Tony Kemp just got called up. McCann, it's not like
different.
He'd spent 12 years with the Astros, right? He didn't have – that voice in the room. He was respected because of how long he had been at it, but Brian McCann couldn't stop that. Yeah, he couldn't stop that.
Yeah.
I'm curious with this whole thing, you know, because we obviously it's been put aside, right, with all of this, and we know that opening day is still a good ways away, is how that will affect the reaction to all this. Will this all surface back up when the Astros start playing? I would imagine it will, but will it be blunted at all just by the sheer fact that we're so glad that the game and all sports theoretically would be back at that point. I think that'll be interesting.
I would be more surprised if nothing. I mean, I do think spring training was telling us there's a lot of people, and I mean a lot, not just fans, a lot of people that are pretty disgusted by all this and feel like the Astros have to pay. And I don't even with that being said, the excitement of sports being back, I still think it is going to be very, very hostile for the Astros for a good while, for a long time.
I hope it is. I hope it is. They deserve it. And not everybody on that team deserves it. That's the unfortunate part. It's just like, you know, in college, like you have one player that cheats that's ineligible and the whole team suffers. Unfortunately, that's just kind of a part of it. But they need to take their punishment on this one. And I don't want to hear anybody coming out saying like, hey, we said we were sorry. No, you just kind of – you got to stand up there and take it.
Yep.
Especially the ringleaders.
We'll come back with You Just Made the List next.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.